Welcome to another episode of Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun. I am sharing part two of the Joshua Stoddard podcast today. We did part one last week. It is entitled Part One. This one shall be known as Part Two. Part one, we talked about death in various forms, and in part two, we will be talking about this interesting word, healing. So I'm excited for you guys to hear this conversation, some really thoughtful questions that Joshua poses, and I'm excited to get this started. So before we begin, please remember to give us feedback, follow the podcast, subscribe, rate it. This allows other people to know about it. It puts the podcast higher in the rankings so that it can be shared with more people. All right, here we go. So we agreed that doing a part two of this was in order and appropriate, given the nature of your last podcast, and you had some updates you wanted to share, and I guess an hour was not enough to go into the depths of this whole process for you, which is understandable.
Yeah.
So let's bring it back. So where we left off was an epic story about your father, and your back pain.
Yep.
And so let's take it from there.
Yeah. I don't even really know where to begin now. It's like it's a whole new day. Here we are.
It is. It's a whole new podcast. We don't even have to talk about that if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. I mean,
we could talk about skiing on Mount Hood.
Yeah. Yeah. I went skiing yesterday, which was a huge victory for. Where things were with my back earlier, or in 2019, it was looking pretty grim. And at this point, I'm up to running 4 miles every day. And
whoa!
I went skiing yesterday.
I'm not. Good for you.
Yeah. So it's like, I think it was important for me to share that. That part of, on part one of the podcast, I talked about how I went through it and through it with my father at the end of his life. And then also that experience I had with Kratom, and it was quite the journey, but I think it's important for me to share that I made it through it all. And the body is so powerful at healing itself. And I experienced that. And then even more rapid pace than I had imagined.
So how long would you say was what you imagined versus what happened?
Well, I mean, if I'm being totally frank, there was moments within the midst of it all that I had kind of, it's not like I'd thrown in the towel, but I had sort of given up the idea of running ever again.
So that's something that you did before.
Yeah, I've run a couple of marathons. Yep. And all the talk with back issues is like running is a terrible idea because it's pretty high impact. Mm-hmm. Just pounding your feet on the pavement. But through all of it, my father told me actually several times that stretching always made things worse with his back.
Interesting. Running, like before or after or both?
Stretching before and after running, is that what you're talking about?
Or yeah.
Exercise? Yeah, stretching period. And he told me that when he had low back pains, when he was in his 30s or something like that, he said the only thing that ever worked for him was running.
Huh. Interesting.
I know. Yeah. Possibly like a genetic thing or I don't know, but I do know that looking back now, I realized that I was like doing too much yoga. I didn't think I was doing enough, but like in retrospect, I was stretching too much. And once I stopped stretching and then just started running, it like everything shifted. I mean, given I did do a bunch of different treatments with a chiropractor and spinal decompression and resting and all sorts of different things, but really I think that that running has been a big part of the solution for me. Because really looking back, it was, I think the back issues came from me driving so much and and giving so much, and really, if I'm being totally honest with myself, giving from a space of like scarcity, thinking that I like for myself and for others, like thinking that I had to do it.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I'm glad I did it, and I don't regret it. Like, you know, I feel like I planted the seed of like sound meditation around the country, and I'm really glad that I went there, but I don't plan to tour as much as I did the last 2 years.
Wow. Well, there you have it. And I'm just loving your sacrilegious comment to all the yogis out there.
I know. It's like the last thing a yogi wants to hear, but like,
I have a few of those to share myself.
Well, it's, you know, and everybody's body is different. And
that's the thing.
And my thought is too, and you probably know more about this than me, but like, I mean, going into it, I didn't grow up a yogi, and my body just hasn't been conditioned to that. You know, like even sitting and meditation, cross-legged, definitely can't do full lotus. The runner part of me makes that challenging too. But I wasn't taught yoga as a kid, so using something like yoga, which my body hadn't really acclimated to, or I really, to be fully transparent, is that, I wasn't fully connected with my body and mindful of all the give and take and the grace that I needed to give my body within yoga. So it was like I was a novice at yoga trying to fix a heavy duty problem and not really knowing how to listen. So I think that, people in my scenario, it might not be that yoga is actually a bad thing. It's more just not being equipped or having the experience to know when, it's too much.
Well, and it's the whole Western thing with going, oh, I see what that looks like. And then, so I'll copy that action to get that result.
Totally.
Where it's never about the action, has to do with how you're, engaging in the activity. And so, if you're more comfortable running, then you're probably engaging in that from a much more aligned state of being than you would be, like this thing you feel like you have to live up to, or get better at, or whatever.
Right. And it's, I know that there's probably a lot, or I feel that there's a lot of it that running for me is a meditation. So let alone of like the different energy that I release or receive from doing that physical exercise, the meditation part of it is huge for me. And, I also don't want to discredit to the fact that I think that after my father died, that was like a release for me. And really, there's so many elements that go into it. And I definitely want to be clear in saying that it wasn't like yoga's fault, or like that there's just so many pieces to the puzzle. And I feel that way about so many different things within like healing myself, that it's usually not just one clear answer.
Yeah. And it's usually not, it's not like replicatable. Is that a word?
Exactly.
You'll meet someone who has like the same back issue you think as you, and you'll go, well, try this, 'cause that's, but that won't be the journey that they're meant to go on. So it won't work in the same way, probably. It might be if that's what they're meant to hear and they're meant to, if that was the thing, but, it's like all the diets people try and the different exercise things and the, the affirmations and whatever, like it's great if that's working for you. But if you're doing it because you're hoping to achieve something and you just don't, but you keep doing it, you know, because that's what you're supposed to be doing, or
yeah,
that's what it takes to heal this or to be good. Or, I mean, then it's just this never ending spiral of trying to do stuff that you don't really want to do.
Right.
And yeah, I found that with diet too, you know, it's like, it's great if your diet works for you. And if it doesn't, then be open to what your body wants to eat.
I know. Isn't it crazy how far, like, humanity has come as far as diet goes? Like when we were kids in school, there was the pyramid,
right.
You know, and that was just applied across the board. Mm-hmm. You know? But boy, oh boy.
Yeah. Wasn't it always curious? It was always curious to me why sugar had a place on that pyramid at all.
Wait, it did? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was like in that tiny, like, wasn't it? It was like coffee, sugar, you know, stuff. I'm like, okay, I get that these are consumable items, but why should we have a place on the pyramid?
In the pyramid. I mean, yeah, I like to be all inclusive with my food. My theory is like, anytime I cut something completely out of my diet, then my immunity, you know, weakens to it the more I'm away from it. So I don't know, maybe it's that idea, but I doubt it.
Oh, well, I'm not saying it's wrong to eat sugar. I just it's like, it's obviously, I don't think any nutritionist would say it's nutritionally necessary. So that's why I thought it was funny for it to be on the pyramid. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's, man, wouldn't it be awesome if sugar was necessary?
I mean, if that's, you know, if that's all the calories that you can, you know, that you can get, then it might be, you know, really depends where you are.
Yeah, right. And the fruits are, exactly. Yeah. What environment you're in.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sugar has been necessary at moments in my life. It's like, it's been my way of allowing myself to just like have a moment. And
sugar is just my bias. I mean, I want to make that clear, like that, you know, it might be necessary for you.
Well, what I'm saying is necessary, almost like when I was, you know, when I was drinking, I'm sober 5 years this May.
Oh, wow. Sober. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. But when I was drinking, I, you know, when I first sobered up, I made myself so wrong about drinking. But then several years later, I realized that that's where I was at. And I didn't have the tools of meditation or mindfulness and the community to support it. So that was the tool I had to survive in that moment was to drink and to just like take a break because I didn't know how to deal with my anxiety or panic attacks. And so it did serve me for a period of my life until I was ready to move on from it. So I feel that way about sugar or anything that could be used to like escape or numb out. You know, sometimes we just need things to take a break.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's so great about not making yourself wrong for it. You know, you don't have to regret it or, you know, feel shame around the things that you needed to do.
Yeah.
And that's a nice way to frame it too, is like, that's what I needed to do then. And
because I think it's just so easy to just like look back and be like, that was a terrible thing that I did. But that's where I was at, you know. And if it weren't for alcohol, I'm not a suicidal kind of person, but like it had gotten to points where it might have been close, because I just didn't know how to cope, you know, and so I needed to shut down.
Yeah.
And then start over the next day.
So are you what you would term an alcoholic, or did you just stop because it just wasn't serving you anymore? Do you like
I don't like to label myself an alcoholic anymore. Uh-huh. I love the AA. I love it got me through the first 3 months. But I realized that it also could be like limiting for me to label myself as something.
Yeah.
That is, you know, it is there, you know, so I'm not in denial about it. Like, it's more of like an addiction thing than an alcoholic thing, if you ask me. I mean, I definitely was an alcoholic at a time, but I'm not now. I'm sober. And I believe in, you know, that people can move on from things. And I believe that I have moved on from it. It's I've been through a lot in the last 5 years, and I haven't drank, and so currently I am not an alcoholic. I am free of that bondage.
Yeah, that I've been curious about that, because I know that, you know, that I think that's how the meetings start, right? Is no matter how sober, how long you've been sober, you're always referred to as an alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
Which feels like it could that could feel weird, I think, if, you know, it's like, I don't know, I don't even know what to compare it to, if there's something in my life that, like, I've been, you know, but I'm sure, but there's lots of things that I've been that I don't feel connected to anymore that I suppose I could return to, but I won't, you know.
Right. Well, you know, there's so many different things that could happen, or phases of our life. But, you know, so it's like, I was a baseball player when I was a kid, and this is probably a terrible analogy.
Let's see where it goes.
But I'm not a baseball player anymore, you know?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, but it's not really as simple as that, because some people really need to be confronted with the fact of, like, the impact that their alcoholism or, you know, their addiction had in their life, and it needs to be a daily reminder that this is something that needs to be in their awareness. And it was for me too. I'm not this, you know, not saying that I wasn't one of those people. I there was a time where I had to go through that. And I think it's like, I'm really glad that AA is there for people, because some need that support, because it's like the addiction is so strong. And maybe they don't have the tools of meditation or mindfulness, or realize that, you know, stories from the past are things that, you know, we can carry with us. And those stories, if we carry them and we're attached to them, can continue to create our future. But if we can learn from them, and then, you know, declare something new and create something new, then I don't know. I think we're whole, perfect, and complete in every moment. And if any label can be just so limiting, if you ask me.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, it can serve you until it doesn't. Right.
That's how I feel about it. I probably go against the grain of most people that are sober, or I have no idea. I can only speak for myself, but that's what works for me.
It works for, for you. I think we're coming more and more to that realization. I hope I am, at least, you know, that it works. If it works for me, it works for me.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm certainly vocal about sharing the things that work for me, but I don't feel the need to, like, convert, you know, to get people to do the things that I'm doing. But I mean, if I'm enjoying something, I'll certainly share it. But yeah, there's no right way anymore in my, in my belief system.
Yeah. So have you ever been confronted with addiction?
For sure. I definitely have an addictive personality. Yeah. I think with alcohol too, I mean, it never got to the point where it was like consuming my day, but I definitely would use it, you know, at night to not have to feel, the pain that I was feeling. And when I was living with my parents after college, I was going through depression, which I think was related to my thyroid. I had really low thyroid activity, and so I was sleeping a lot and very low energy. And I remember, like, just wishing it were the end of the day so that we could start drinking wine, you know, that sort of thing. But But yeah, I discovered yoga. I got into raw food. And I wasn't able to kind of give up the alcohol and that in that period of my life until I discovered Kundalini yoga. And then there was this rule, like you're not, you don't drink, you know?
Yeah. It's very, very pure, like clean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, I did that for a while and I followed the rules and whatever. And now I'm kind of coming to, you know, this place in my life where I'm like, you know, I would like to make decisions based on me and not, you know, the rules that I've agreed to live by.
A belief system.
Yeah. And so I use things in a different way now, you know.
That's cool.
But
it seems we're both at like going through massive transitions and like birthing something new here, huh?
Yeah. I feel like I've shifted into a new reality. It's
yeah, me too.
It's
yeah.
Really it's like on the one hand I was thinking there are so many things that I've wanted for so long that have just seemingly magically appeared in my life. I mean,
wow.
I have my dream relationship. There's, you know, things that I've wanted that are just happening. And but now the process is like, oh my God, do I feel worthy of this?
Am I interesting?
And of course the answer is yes, but still those mental like viruses, you know, the viruses of your limiting thoughts, mm-hmm. they creep up sometimes and I'm like,
yeah,
oh, how interesting that I think that's
yeah. Boy, oh boy. Right.
Yeah.
I'm so curious. I don't know what the shift is for you, but are you still involved with the Kundalini community or?
I'm feeling, I still really enjoy doing Kundalini yoga. And mm-hmm. Obviously I love the music, you know, I'm mm-hmm. Probably eternally linked to those mantras. And, mm-hmm. But in terms of the, it's interesting. It's almost like when you discover that you can love Jesus without having to go to church.
Without being a Christian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I've been feeling. I'm like, I'm experiencing the crux of what Yogi Bhajan taught, which is that when you're in alignment, when you're in yoga, when your physical and your finite and your infinite self are yoked in yoga, mm-hmm. then you act from inspiration. You get intuition. You're living mm-hmm. in, you're like on a different playing field. And in that state, there's the living according to someone else's tenets or rules. It doesn't make any sense. It's opposed
yeah.
to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, you know, and there are moments when I'm not, you know, in full alignment and moments when I am, and that's fine. That's the human experience, but yeah. getting into that. And I'm also finding that getting into that state doesn't require, being a certain way, living a certain way, doing certain things. It's about my relationship to my own mind, which is actually one of the lines in Sikhism anyway. So I feel like it's, mm-hmm. yeah. I haven't walked away from anything, but mm-hmm. I guess I'm just seeing it differently.
I have a question within all this, within, Kundalini and Sikh, faith, there's pretty strict within, like with even in music, there's, isn't there a strict, like you need to listen to certain things that are like Kundalini or Sikh sort of certified, or am I
well,
wrong in that?
Yeah. No, not totally. Yogi Bhajan, wanted his yoga teachers to play the music that like people within that tradition were creating as opposed to,
uh-huh.
you know, playing like top 40 radio yep. or whatever. Now at that time, there was not a big spiritual music recording industry, you know, not that yeah. it's like huge, but right now, I mean, there's so much
yeah.
kirtan music. It comes from different traditions. Would he be opposed to people playing that in yoga classes? I don't know. And then
yeah,
there's the
question
of like, Well, some of the Kundalini yoga artists are creating music that's using mantras from other traditions, and teachers are playing that in their classes. So is that okay because the person singing it is part of the tradition? And then it's not, you know, so when you start to ask those sorts of questions, it's like, to me, it's like the lines are blurry.
Yeah. Know?
It's very blurry. So couldn't you just use your own discretion and your own sense of whether this fits to figure out if this works, you know, if you're a yogi, I think so.
But, right. You know, again, right.
Works for me. Maybe not for you.
Was there a time period where you were too strict with your, or where you feel like you were too strict with yourself with all of
that?
Well,
I think when you start doing something and it's this whole thing, then for me at least, I like to go all in. So yeah, I went all in and I was super strict about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I think from that place you can go, okay, what works for me? What doesn't?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a natural progression. Yeah. It's like when people start, I don't know, and they like join Zumba or something, and it's like the only thing that anyone should be doing. And you know, and then they've done it for 10 years excited. And they see all the, you know, all the like cracks in the in the ceiling is, you know.
Yeah. So do you, in the, like, especially now with where you're at now, do you feel like you're opening up to not only listening to more music that are outside of those sort of ideas, and also creating more that's outside of all of that?
Yeah. I mean, I was always open to listening to other kinds of music. Yeah.
But, oh, cool.
But yeah, I stopped actually writing English songs because of the nature of those songs. I was using my art to complain. And, and so now the stuff that I write is different. So yeah, I'm looking at recording some, you know, non-Kirtan music. I've done a couple of cover songs, you know, with
Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah. And we just did Happy actually, which is its own song.
Nice. Nice. With, you were about to say his name, right? Songs.
Oh, with Songs at Eden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And then I did, you know, I did the French Lullaby Sound Healing album with you.
Yeah.
For Pamela. So.
Oh, you just brought up something that I would love to talk about. And it's just the word, the use of the word healing. It's something that I'm like intentionally shifting out of my language within, I believe in healing, and I, you know, like I believe that it happens in so many different ways. But what I've come to realize lately is that by labeling my own music as healing, I feel like it's misleading in so many different ways. Because sure, any music can be healing if you ask me, like totally. Even Metallica, especially Metallica, like that's, it's a, like, you know, maybe a lot of people won't agree with that, but what do you do with an emotion of anger or like, you know, when that comes up? And I think that's where that music comes in. And it's like when I was a teenager and listening to Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins, there was a lot of angst in me, and I was able to channel, you know, a lot of that energy through that, and then making my own music in that sort of idea. And, you know, it is informative and it can be misleading, but, you know, it all comes down to what are you devoting yourself to? You know, if you're devoting yourself to Metallica, then your life might start to show up like Metallica. Not that it's bad. I'm like not saying that at all, but it's what I'm trying to get at is I really don't want to be misleading and people thinking that like what I do, and I definitely don't want to claim that what I do is any greater or healing than any other music out there.
I get your point. I've also wondered about the word healing because especially when I started listening to Abraham and you know, I understood that it's, healing is sort of a misleading word because basically if you weren't resistant to healing, it would just be constantly happening.
Right.
Right. So you don't need to go to a sound bath. You don't need to meditate.
No.
But you're in a lot of resistance. not yeah. you, but everyone, mm-hmm. me, we're in a lot of resistance. Mm-hmm. Being a human's about being resistant, you know, in some mm-hmm. ways, because that's what keeps us alive mm-hmm. In this physical body. If we didn't think we, you know, if we weren't resistant to anything, then we wouldn't be here. So when you go to a sound bath, you're basically intending for healing mm-hmm. to happen. Your belief yeah. system is that mm-hmm. if you relax,
totally,
you know, then you're going to drop this resistance and yep. what was going to happen anyway can happen so much more easily.
Right. And that's kind of my point, is that like, if you believe it going into it, then it can happen. There's no resistance, you know,
right.
like you're, what you're talking about. And it, that same thing could be applied for somebody going to a Metallica concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just that I don't know of anyone who goes to a Metallica concert with the intention of healing, but you totally could, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's people and I've had this conversation too, where there's people that worship, I mean, people, guitar players and musicians are called rock stars and rock gods.
Mm-hmm.
And people do worship them, you know, and I don't know. I'm with you. I don't think the majority, maybe there's like one or two people that go to a Metallica concert being like, oh, they're going to heal me.
Yeah. Like a miracle happened last time. It'll happen again. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that happens too.
Yeah.
Though. It's like without intending on it, like people have out of body experiences or, yeah. you know, concerts move people.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, it more comes down to like just being present to whatever emotion you're connecting with in the music and being with that and allowing it to be and not judging it to be wrong or whatnot. But I just don't want people to think that they have to come to a sound bath to experience healing. It's like I feel like I'm probably being extreme, but I just don't want to be considered or labeled a healer because we're all capable of healing.
Right. Right. But so how do you get someone at the, here's the question. So healing could sort of be like the word God, where mm-hmm. it's being misused and therefore you just choose not to use it. So you could say source mm-hmm. or universe or whatever, mm-hmm. or you could use the word God, like, Reverend Michael Beckwith uses the word God, mm-hmm. you know, which doesn't make it feel like it's external to you, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it's a different concept of God. Mm-hmm. But God. I mean, that doesn't always work because people have their own concepts. So, I mean, even like within Kundalini yoga, for example, where it's based on Sikhism, you know, God and me are one. I am one with everything. There is only one thing. Mm-hmm. And yet we say God like it's something outside of us because that's how we've been brought up. So mm-hmm. for me, saying the word source makes, I don't know, that feels cozier to me. But mm-hmm. it could be the same with healing, right? Where mm-hmm. you could choose to completely not use the word, or I guess you could use it in a way that feels more empowering.
Yeah. Well, and here's an idea too, is like, what's the opposite of healing? Is it suffering or, you know, discord?
Accumulating.
Or, yeah, exactly. Well, that's a great way of looking at it too. So who's to say that the opposite of healing isn't actually the beginning of healing? And then within all of this too, I bring this up and there's a lot of people talking about right now how like high vibrational things, or you know, it's like people who are high vibes only, sort of,
oh, like, yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, positives only, smile, you know, don't you know, walk around with a frown on your face, you know, it's like high vibes only, and that's to me, that is just like up and down, good and bad.
Dual,
and it's like, it's, if you ask me, it's like everything serves a purpose,
mm-hmm.
and within like in that mindset, everything can be healing then, because it's, if it's all a part of the process. But a thought that I had within all of this is, within the idea of high vibrational or raising your frequency or these different slogans that people are using to explain like going to another level or like spiritual upgrading or whatever, it, to me as an audio engineer, it makes no sense because like, so then if like high vibrational things are the best things, then so we shouldn't listen to songs with bass guitar in it.
Okay. Like, so I had this question for the longest time. This is why I went to the Abraham, I don't know what she called it, conference. That I went to 2 or 3 years ago in Phoenix in December. I went with this question. I was like, what does high vibration look like? Does it sound like a higher note?
Did
you get an answer? Louder? I swear they looked at me and was like, no one's going to be interested in that question. Moving on.
I think it's confusing to people because people don't know about frequency.
Right.
Like it's not. Go ahead.
Okay. No. Finish. I'm excited.
So I don't want to cut you off though, too. What were you about to say?
So this was like the charge for me. I was like, I needed this question answered. And at this point I had been listening to them for long enough that I could sort of, I could sort of answer my own questions. Like I was hearing answers, but I did not find the answer to this question. So when I met Gary, who channels Joshua in this course that I was doing, I listened to his podcast. At the end, it says, if you have a question for Joshua, then write to us. So I'm in communication with him at this point and I send him my question. And to my astonishment, Facebook messages me a PDF of the answer, like 2 pages written on this. Okay. So do you want to know the answer?
Yeah. What's the answer?
Okay. It's really like, I think the terminology is to people who do music is just confusing because it has nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
When they say high vibration or high frequency, what they mean is an ability to detect in a stronger way. So when you're higher vibrating, you can taste more, you see more deeply, you hear more deeply, you feel more deeply. It's like a heightened awareness.
It's a heightened sense.
Mm-hmm.
Could we please change? I'm so attached to like, I'm like, because
stop calling it frequency. I know.
To me, it's another God in the sky, hell below analogy that just doesn't make sense in physics.
Mm-hmm. and it's keeping the people who think that away from this information, you think?
Well, no, I'm being extreme, it's like, but it does frustrate me because, people think that the singing bowls that I use, they come and they're like, ooh, your bowls, those are the healing frequencies. And I'm just like, oh yeah. And the rest of it, like, the guitar and my voice, that's just a little extra, that I throw
in
there.
Well, that's why I'm so much more healing than you because I can sing so much higher, right?
Ooh, this brings up another conversation. Uh-huh. So being a guitar player and then working for Gibson Guitars for a long time and getting to know bunch of like legendary guitar players, Paul Simon to Slash from Guns N' Roses.
Wow, cool.
I've always been fascinated by like, what is it about guitar players that people, it's like in the band, it seems like guitar players can be the most popular.
Hmm.
If they're a shredder or there's somebody that really stands, it's like, it's usually a guitar player that stands out in the band. And, I know it's not that way. Some people prefer drummers. Some people love drummers. And again, everybody's different, but I have seen that there's tends to be this like glorification of guitar players that are really good. And I was thinking about this the other day and I realized, and I'm sure people have done studies or put this together, but I have heard in my own studies that our sweet spot of the human hearing range is around the sound of the sound of birds, and which is very close to the frequency range of guitars. And it's the sound of birds is believed to be the sweet spot for us, because in nature and survival, and I think, and I don't know if this is something that's stated in these studies, but I think that hearing, before we developed weapons and, you know, became more of a predator, I think that hearing was actually our first use, or for our strongest and most important sense in order to survive. Because you can only see so far, and especially in the dark or in the woods or whatnot. And it's like, if you look at a deer or any other prey animal, hearing is like their survival.
And, what if it was so, just intuition?
Well, there's that too. I mean, yeah, that's, but who, but we, yeah, use, no, I, we use vision and sight and hearing all day long, but intuition is like not, has it only until recent years have people really tapped into that, you know? Yeah. I mean, we've always used our intuition, but I don't know if we've always been present to it.
Well, I'm just thinking, because we were probably more animal-like in the beginning, and animals are constantly, are like, you know, hyper-intuitive beings. They're always listening to their inspiration, and I think, but maybe that was like the first to be noticed as useful. To be noticed, like in the physical realm.
That's what I think. And so my thought is like, I think we're still in that, like, it's still a sweet spot for us, that hearing range. And it makes sense that guitar players would sort of be, you know, touted or glorified in a way.
Okay, I have something to add to that, because when you first asked that question, here's what I got. They're playing, like, the height of the guitar is basically in like that sex energy.
Oh.
Right?
So there's that too. Yeah.
And it's like this sort of like masterful, like root, not root chakra, but like second chakra, like raising. I don't know. That's what I got.
I was looking,
it's actually, that's kind of like a sensual sort of.
Yeah, it's very sexual.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, and then again, like what we were talking earlier, it's not always just one thing that is answer. So I'm sure there's a bunch of things that are applied into it. And it's like another part of that too, is like the lead guitar player has a lot of freedom. They're not stuck to a vocal mic or behind a drum kit, so they can be the flashier person. So there's that too. But I really like to believe that it is kind of like that frequency range that people really stand out to. Because within that same idea, if you look at like the vocalists throughout rock and roll, and I speak to rock and roll because that's the world that I'm in, but like Robert Plant, he basically emulated the guitar sound in a bunch of different ways. Or Ozzy Osbourne, or those sort of guys that really got that high pitch, or Queen. They were in that range too.
Yeah.
I wonder too, maybe even, I've only mentioned men, but like women, female vocalists, it's like a even higher octave. So I wonder where that sits too. I don't know exactly what the frequencies are, but it's just an idea that I love to think about, basically. Take it or leave it.
Yeah. That is super interesting. I've never wondered that.
These are the things that I sit around and think about all day. And then I just realized, so this is part of my transformation within the context of the idea of me not labeling myself as like a healer, is I found myself in, because I've pondered and think about frequency all day long, I found myself going into the sound bath thinking and basically judging people of not knowing as much as I do about frequency or sound. So basically me putting pressure on myself going into the sound bath thinking I need to educate everybody. And it just ended up being this thing that like I could never satisfy it, because my judgment was that people don't get it. They don't get the sound bath. And then when I come to a realization was, this is like, they don't need to get it. And there's so much freedom in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that Joshua is always saying, the other Joshua, I love it because I tell people I'm doing a podcast with Joshua today, and they're always used to hearing me say Joshua, like the beings that Gary channels. But no, you're the Joshua of the day. But one of the things that they say is that you're only ever doing something for yourself. You know, when you try to do it for somebody else, then you're just manipulating them. You're like, you're trying to get whatever you think the outcome is for them to make you feel better. You know, so you're even like, when you're teaching something, you're never even doing it for the person that you're teaching it to. Yeah. You're always doing it for yourself. And so, you know, it's so much simpler to be like, do I want to do this sound bath? Is this a fun thing for me to do right now?
Right.
And if it is, then great. And the irony is, of course, people get so much more out of it because the intention's so much clearer, you know.
Yeah. Well, I realized that I just put a lot of weight on myself and moving forward, I'm looking forward to going into it just basically as I'm like looking at it as all I'm doing is guiding people into meditation. And just the only thing that I think I will teach moving forward, I'm sure I'll teach. It's like an addiction. It's an addiction of its own. But is that what I intend to do at the beginning of the sound bath is remind or inform people that the sounds that I'm making are a great anchor for meditation. Mm-hmm. It can be a great anchor for meditation, and just bringing that to their awareness, and then basically just centering around like a really simple, maybe even just breath work, and then we're going into the meditation, and it's going to last this long, and then there's going to be silence at the beginning and the ending, and that's it. And not like before, I was like thinking that I needed to explain, you know, how entrainment works or resonance or all these different things that people generally don't care about.
Well, I mean, but they might, like, you if you did here's my guess, if you did it purely because this sounded super fun to you, you'd end up getting these people who were interested.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is I have too. Yeah. But I think what my point, and this is, thank you for bringing that up, is that I'm basically, I want to give myself more freedom to create art.
Yeah.
And I was boxing myself in, and by not boxing myself in anymore and not putting that pressure on myself, I'm going to open it up, and then it opens things up for people too. So it's not, I'm not really making myself wrong about how I approached it before, but I'm just realizing how kind of limiting it was.
Yeah. And, you know, you couldn't see that unless you did that. So
no, totally. And, you know, I'd like a lot of people have just really gotten into mindfulness and all of that in the past, like 7 years, really. I mean, the past 5 years solidly, but like, you know, it hasn't been my whole life, so it's you know, I'm learning as I go.
Yeah, and it will evolve. I mean,
yeah,
the way that it looks in our world now, it's going to look different.
Right. I think what it comes down to is I just have so much reverence and appreciation for all musicians, and I just want to I want to put myself back out on the level playing field where I'm not closing myself off to any sort of form of music or opportunity, and in doing so, it's like it opens people up to having their own experience with what I offer.
Yeah, it just made me think of this because I had a conversation with this musician, Deepak Ramaprian, before this one. And so that podcast will come out before this one. So you can go listen to that one and know what I'm talking about. But he does kind of everything in a I don't want to judge and say well-balanced, but, you know, he incorporates every part of his musicality into his life. So like he works for Disney, he does his own side project. He leads, kirtan at, you know, he has a a spiritual teacher that he leads, you know, chanting for. He's like sort of all over the place with what he's doing, and he still considers himself a spiritual being, but he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's living in the world and doing, which I appreciated in listening to his journey. And I mean, it's funny, like why wouldn't we be able to do that? Of course we can. And so many, so many people, so many celebrities are doing exactly that. Like they don't, you know, parade as you know, spiritual leaders, but they are. You know,
well, I think that there's like, there's integration that's happening through the arts. And like, for instance, Kanye West has, you know, fully come out with his Christian records, which I think is amazing.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, he's got it. He released a record called Jesus is King. And he spoke at Joel Osteen's church, and Christians and his fans are confused, but he's being authentic. He's being authentic and he's passionate. And more importantly than anything else, I'm getting the chills, is I wish I had somebody that I looked up to when I was in my 20s that gave me permission to believe in whatever I wanted to and share it. Mm-hmm. Without feeling like in the rock and roll world, I self-imposedly, and because of the culture, it just didn't seem like it was cool for me to believe.
You are the one you've been waiting for. Go out and be that Joshua for the boys and girls. And non-binary.
So it's just an exciting time of people being really authentic of like, I think like there was a time period where if an artist crossed over to religious or really shared their religious beliefs through an entire album as a concept or an idea, they may have ostracized themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think actually, I don't know the whole story, but I think Cat Stevens is a prime example.
Because he chose an unpopular spiritual path.
That's a big part of it. So it's like, I applaud and I appreciate their courage, because there's a lot of people, you know, and there's in countries it's not even legal, right, to have different spiritual beliefs, but this day and age, I think it's really important to embrace and share whatever it is that's there for us, and not feel like we have to put on a mask to appease everybody around us.
Yeah. I had my friend Sam Bullington on one of the podcasts and one of the podcast episodes, and he runs a transgender choir or chorus in Colorado, and hearing him talk about like the kind of dissociation that people who are transgender, who end up taking hormones, experience was so intriguing to me. Like, had you ever considered that? How your relationship, you know, how like your voice would change, and so your relationship with your voice would be totally different. It'd be like getting used to a whole, I don't know, like going into physical reality again.
You know? What would that be like? I don't know. It's not in my experience at all. I've never thought of it.
Yeah. But that made me think of that when you were talking about, you know, living your truth and making unpopular decisions, and you know. It seems to be the time where we're at least realizing that we can make these unpopular decisions without being, you know, thrown out of our tribe. Because that's what the other Joshua is always saying. That's kind of where our fear of standing out stems from. Is this like sort of built-in genetic code that if you were to stand out from, you know, your little hunter-gatherer tribe, that they'd kick you out and you'd die because you wouldn't be able to survive. But you know, that's not the case anymore.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, in some countries, as you mentioned, but certainly not here, you know, here in the United States.
Or in general, too, I don't know. But I wonder what the percentage would be right now. I always want to know, like, what percentages of,
it's,
you know, how many people are.
Probably a lot smaller than we imagine, yeah.
Yeah, we're in such a bubble, aren't we? Jeez. Yeah. what I like to believe is that animals have been leading the way on this sort of acceptance and compassion. Mm-hmm. The unusual connections amongst animals just seems to be becoming more and more popular, or like more abundant or more frequent. Like, for instance, there's a bear, a lion, and a tiger that are best friends. And I saw a woodpecker that gave a squirrel a ride through the air. And I've seen footage of a duck that's feeding koi fish. Aww. And I believe the animals are leading the way in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah. I think what it is, right, is that, so like everything's always, I'm going to use the horrible word, but the frequency of the planet is raising.
Well, and that is a true statement too, with the Schumann resonance has spiked up to 150 Hertz or something like that recently, which when it was first discovered was at around 7 Hertz. Since around 2012, which I don't believe is a coincidence, it started spiking up, and even before then, but I think in 2012, don't quote me on this, but it's really started to spike up to an audible range.
And so what, the resonance of the planet?
Yeah, Earth. There's like an electromagnetic, and I don't even know how this works, but the way I understand it is like, it's like Earth has like an electromagnetic charge to it. I'm probably so wrong on this, but there's a vibration that it's sort of the crust of the Earth vibrates at, and it has spiked in more recent years. And what's interesting is when I first discovered this and first read about it, I was like, I don't know if I believe that. But then it was in a time period where it had spiked into audible human hearing range, where it's above 20 Hertz, which is the lowest frequency that humans can typically hear.
Oh, wow.
And the day that I read about it and heard about it, I was like, I wonder. So like somewhere out in the desert, you could probably hear it. And that same day I met with a friend that went on a vision quest in the desert. And he told me while we were hanging out, he's like, the craziest thing happened. He's like, I heard the Earth.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what? I just read about this. This is, and so to me, it was an affirmation. I'm like, wow, this is legit. And it makes a lot of sense to me too. But what I take away from it more than anything else is that time is speeding up. Mm-hmm. Because when you go up in frequencies, the wave gets quicker. Mm-hmm. Lower frequencies are really low, dense, mm-hmm. slow waves. But the higher frequency you go, the quicker the waves are. To put it super simple, but it's a time thing. So I think that everything is being sped up between edits on movies and mm-hmm. music videos or TV to the amount of output that we're doing as humans per day. I just think that the pace of things are speeding up.
Yeah.
That's my
So my point about that though was that that was fascinating. Is that the animals are less resistant to that speeding up. So they're gonna be the first ones to benefit from that. Raising that in sense. Awareness.
Huh. Raising. I like that. I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day now.
All right. Good. Excellent. Well, perhaps that's a good place to end our part two.
Yeah.
And maybe we just need our own podcast, Joshua, because it doesn't seem like this ever ends.
There's fun things to talk about. And I like that we each have our own unique perspective to view things at.
Yeah. For sure. Okay. Well, so think about that. Maybe that, another album, but perhaps a podcast. And have a Have a great rest of your day. And I will put the links to everything Joshua Stoddard in the description box.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you greatly. You've been I don't even have the words. You've been very important in my life, and just the way that everything's unfolded, I'm very grateful for you.
Well, thank you. I'm very grateful for you. You're also very important to me. So thank you.
Yay.
And we're so close to each other now. We could
see
each other if we wanted.
Yeah, let's go for a hike.
All right. I will not be joining you on your 4 mile run, but I can handle a hike, I think.
Oh man, trail running is the best.
I bet.
Anyway.
Good for you. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.